This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
On Dubai Eye 103.8, the UAE's number one talk radio station.
Helen Farmer with you on today's episode of Afternoons. We were asking, have kids' birthday parties got out of control? It was a resounding yes, but why? What can parents do to mitigate the requests? And any ideas for some good value celebrations in the UAE? Also discussing the role of social media in mental health misdiagnosis. Do psychologists now get people turning up phone in hand, having diagnosed themselves after watching TikTok, we found out. Plus news of the first AI BTEC here in the UAE, some summer camps to try. And we had superstar nutritionist Rashi Chowdhury on hand to answer my questions and yours, busting myths, balancing your hormones through what you eat, and of course, taking your questions too. Thrilled to welcome to the studio Rashi Chowdhury, renowned nutritionist, wellness expert. She's got a real passion for empowering people, which I know is a phrase that gets kind of bandied around a lot. But through her social media and one-on-one work, it is about cutting through all of the you-know-what that we read about, that we see, to help you debunk some common myths and promote a sustainable, and I really mean that, sustainable, realistic, healthy lifestyle. She's got practical advice. She's got evidence-based insights. And we are taking your questions today. Rashi, I'm so glad you're here. How are you?
I'm so happy to be here. I'm always excited to be here, Helen.
We've been trying to make this happen for a while, but you know, we're busy people. We've carved out an hour and the text lines are open and they're going to be busy.
Yeah.
So why should people stay with us to 5 o'clock? What do we think people are going to get out of this next hour of chat?
Yeah, I was thinking about this actually. I love talking hormones and solutions. So whether it's supplements, whether it's you know, some testing, whether it's symptoms, I'm happy to talk about it all.
So hormone balancing, we're going to bust some myths. We're going to, as I said, take your questions. Now, you are huge on social media. And don't make the humble face.
No.
Don't make the humble face. You've got only like 500,000 followers. No. And your engagement is really, really impressive.
That I will take credit for.
100%. Yeah. You should take credit for it because you work hard on that. And I think the reason it works is exactly what we're talking about now. No nonsense, accessible advice that speaks to what people are really worried about. Now, there are an awful lot of so-called experts on social media who might have done, I don't know, a quick, you know, internet certificate, and then suddenly they're a renowned expert. What's annoying you on social right now? Do you feel like there's any trends or any products that you're blowing up and you're going, just don't listen to this absolute garbage?
Wow. So there's so many ways of answering this, to be honest, because I have to also detach myself from this whole situation. Because, you know, I've been on Instagram for like, I don't know, 8 years. And I know you said it's a lot of followers, but actually, there are people who are on Instagram for 2 years with like over millions, like a million followers, you know. So I kind of have to detach from that. Like, I don't want to come across as jealous, although I am. But I'll tell you, I feel, and we were talking about this, right? I loved Instagram back then. You post a picture and you talk, your caption speaks. Your caption talks about everything and everyone's interested in the caption, right? Mm-hmm. The picture didn't matter. All I had to choose was which filter do I put on.
I'll just take a photo of my coffee, stick Valencia on it, and then have a caption. It's not even like people are more discerning now. People have got the attention span of a toddler right now. So you've got to get them with the visual straight away.
Which is really sad, I think, because where are we going with this?
I know.
There is such a massive evolutionary mismatch, which is one of the things I really wanted to cover today. We are not moving physiologically. We are not progressing as fast. And genetically, we're not progressing as fast as our environment outside. Never in the history of humans have we been so overstimulated, so dependent on medication, so, you know, not emotionally well, so abundant yet poor. Mm-hmm. This is such a common thing, right? We're seeing it everywhere.
Do you feel like you're overstimulated?
Oh, 100%. How? How would I not be?
I know.
I spend a lot of time on social media because I have to. A lot of times I just do my thing and bounce, you know. But at the same time, there are times I see like an hour will go by and I'm like, what have I just done? And you know what? The problem is with the scrolling, the minute you finish, you realize how much you are drained. Versus when I go and do a story on my page and I come out, I feel like I've gained something because I've given something of value, right? But when I'm scrolling, It's an energy drain.
The battery goes down. But it's interesting because I think a lot of us, and I say a lot of us, this is me going, I know what I do, is, you know, we're using our phones and we often use food to distract ourselves from discomfort, from boredom, obviously, rather than addressing what's really going on. And I feel like a lot of people, when we've been talking about food recently, I had a lot of people talking about stress eating. And that was a big thing during the pandemic. It was for me, for sure. I was like a little snacker.
Yeah.
And this kind of idea of where our emotions and our appetite kind of intersect.
Yeah.
So can I just ask then, when you're working with people, what are some of the common issues that people are coming to you with, Rashi?
Related to what you just spoke about, I think anxiety, mm-hmm. and that makes them overeat. Mm-hmm. Your cortisol is high, until it drops. And then it's going to be a flat line. And that's when you're like, I've slept for 10 hours. I don't feel well rested. That's your cortisol shouting and screaming because it's actually now not functional at all. Your cortisol is a flat line, you know. But yeah, so anxiety is a very big thing. And then, of course, these things don't stay here, right? If you don't solve it, and even worse, if you're going to pop in pills and Xanax, or antidepressants or anti-anxiety pills and things like that. Antidepressants is not something I want to cover, actually, because I feel like that gets a bit... there's just so much medical advice required there, right? But when you pop in an anti-anxiety pill, what are you basically doing, right? You're not addressing mm-hmm. the root cause. So that then turns into, I'm not sleeping well, and now when I wake up in the morning, and now I'm eating crap, and now I'm gaining weight, mm-hmm. and now, you know what, my period is not okay. It all starts with your adrenals.
And the problem is when you're not sleeping well, you're making poor food choices on the other side of that day as well.
Because your brain hasn't got that brain flush in the night.
And a really popular part of what you do is about balancing hormones through food. Why was that so important to you personally? And why do you feel like a lot of us are really struggling?
Wow. So this goes back to my childhood, Helen. I landed up with endometriosis, and that is a condition, disease that is generally misdiagnosed or undiagnosed for almost 8 years.
The amount of confusion around it is insane. But as you say, people wait an awfully long time to find an expert who can correctly identify what's going on. What were your symptoms, if you don't mind me asking?
I talk about this all the time. And it's such an important topic because, like I said, 1 out of 8 women have it. There are a lot of different symptoms. But why it gets misdiagnosed is because people think period pain is normal. It's absolutely not. And anyone listening or moms listening who have girls who are struggling when they have their period, popping a painkiller is not normal. We're supposed to have normal, like a bit of discomfort. You're going to feel a little bit like your brain waves, for God's sake, are changing so much at that time. So you'll want to like relax a bit and not be over the top. But you cannot be sitting, like your entire life cannot change because you're going to get your period, you know, which happens with a lot of women. If this is one of you, it's a sign. There is a possibility that it could also just be estrogen dominance, right? Just too much estrogen in your body, etc. But if your period pain is really, like if it's really painful, then you got to make sure that you test for endometriosis. When I say test, there's no test. Laparoscopy is the best way to do it. But you can check your CA125, you can do a transvaginal ultrasound. You will also have symptoms of IBS and generally IBS-C, which is IBS constipation.
And would that be during your period or throughout the month?
Throughout the month. So you will be like, it's been 3 days, I haven't pooped. It's not normal, right? Which also we were talking about the blue poop muffins. No, not blue, sorry.
Yeah.
What is blue muffins or
Tash
whatever?
Tash got in touch saying, what does she think about the blue poop challenge?
Yeah.
For anyone that's not familiar with this, what is the blue poop challenge?
It picked up, I think, because of Instagram. Someone did this post. Or I think now there's some... Look, it just tells you a transit. What is your transit time? When I eat something, how long does it take to come out?
And obviously, by eating something blue, it's easier to notice.
But you know what? Just stop having sugary muffins for breakfast. That's another excuse. Why don't we just do sesame seeds? Don't chew them. Take a teaspoon, put it in water, and just gulp it down. Don't chew the seeds. And then see when they come out. It's so easy to spot. You don't need so much sugar.
I'm not a big fan of the kind of word normal, but what would be a healthy range of transit time, whether you are having a blue muffin or some sesame seeds?
So look, there's a lot of controversial research around this as well. According to me, 24 to 28 hours is good. But there are some experts who go on to saying that if you poop just once in 3 days, it's normal. I do not really believe that because I've been in that place and I've also been in a place where I have a healthy poop every morning, clockwork. It just feels different, right? It feels different to get up every morning and poop. Like your brain, everything is so much clearer.
get in touch if Rush can help you. Can we come back to hormones? Because anonymous message here is saying, what food or habits can make PMS worse?
I think the top on this list would be inflammatory foods and inflammatory habits. But let's talk about the foods because that's in our control, right? Cooking in cheap, refined vegetable oils, absolute no-no. You've got to start cooking in ghee, coconut oil, butter. These are the best cooking fats. Make this one switch and a lot will change. This is the first thing. Second, your PMS is going to be really bad if your hormones, your blood sugar levels are going to constantly fluctuate. Mm-hmm. So if you are able to do small things in your lifestyle where you keep your blood sugar balanced, that's the first step when it comes to. You can't have balanced hormones without balanced blood sugar levels. So it's, and you can do simple things like get up.
So what do you, I was going to say, but how? Because I'm like, I get a bit kind of data anxiety. I'm like, I don't want to be checking my phone all the time for, you know, whatever that might be. So how can you do that in a way that feels emotionally healthy?
I love that you asked because, again, simple stuff really works. There are four simple things, which any woman, anyone can start from tomorrow. Get up in the morning and have a teaspoon of ghee, butter, coconut oil. Don't start your day with fruit. Especially if you're somebody who's already struggling with a bit of insulin sensitivity or you have PCOS or any other issues, right? Let's start with a teaspoon of ghee, butter, coconut oil, with coffee, without coffee, up to you. Your breakfast, limit the carbs as much as you can. Let's do protein and fat. Eggs, protein shakes, bowl of sprouts, any of these, you know?
Bowl of sprouts sounds horrendous, but I'll trust you on that.
No. I'm not a sprout. I don't like lentils. But I'm saying this because a lot of people are vegan.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the only reason. But I'm not a fan at all. For me, it's eggs and avo every single day. And I'm happy,
Good stuff, okay.
So that's breakfast. Lunch is when you get your active carbs in because we don't want to be on keto. We don't want, I don't think... Everyone needs keto, right? It's a very specific diet for specific people, specific concerns. So that's why you bring in your carbs at lunch. And every time you're doing an active carb, which is potato, rice, bread. What else comes to your mind when I say active carb?
I thought sweet potato straight away.
Okay. I don't count that as an active carb because a lot of people respond very well to sweet potato. Okay. I'm talking about the ones which definitely raise your blood sugar.
So white rice, white noodles, pasta. Exactly. A baguette.
Yes. Every time you have these, you have to balance it out with the ratio of 1:2 of vegetables. So, or 1:3, based on how much you can tolerate, how much your gut can tolerate. So just make sure that the ratio of your, say, rice to, you know, vegetables is 1:2.
Interesting.
Minimum.
You can kind of eyeball that, right?
Yeah. And some people are like, oh, but I can't eat so many vegetables. And I'm like, then reduce the amount of rice. Mm-hmm. But the ratio is important. So if you can have only half a cup of veggies, then you have half cup, which is not true. But like people will eat more. But I'm just saying as an example. So this would be the second thing, like the rice to veggie ratio or your active carbs to vegetable ratio. This will keep your blood sugar stable. If you can add in a protein, then nothing like it as well, right? You'll have more stable sugars. Third thing would be protein. It's really important that we get minimum 1 gram. But we get the amount, the quality of protein that our body can digest. A lot of times, women are right now just having too much protein. And then they're like, my gut's not okay. Mm-hmm. So that's not fine. But make sure you're getting enough protein in every meal.
What are some of your favorite protein sources, Rashi?
I mean, it's so simple, right? Eggs, chicken, fish is standard for me. I do eggs, chicken and fish every single day. You know, so I'm getting my 25, 30 grams in every meal.
What about additional kind of protein supplements and things like that?
I really enjoy protein shakes. But I feel like because I'm getting it from the natural sources, I'm not... It's like a quick fix for me. Yeah. If I can't eat my eggs, yes, I'm going to grab a protein shake. I'll do a vegan one or a grass-fed one, you know, either one of those, right? I don't do soy, and I don't think anybody should do soy protein shakes or soy anything. But I think edamame and tempeh are great. Like, those are great. But, yeah.
So those are three. What's our fourth?
The fourth one is the most challenging one, but also the most rewarding one. And I think it can solve so many things in your life. But... early dinners.
Yay!
You know, if
I'm so happy you said that.
If you're able to eat at 5, when I say this, I know that there'll be a lot of people just raising their eyebrows and be like, you know, what is this?
But it can be cultural as well, right? Like some people are like, oh, you know, going out for dinner at 9, 10 at night. I'm like, I'm in bed at 9, 10 or 9.
Me too.
Okay, here's my problem. I come home from work, 5:30, 6 o'clock, ravenous. So I eat with the kids.
Yeah.
And then I get to kind of 8:39. I'm like, I could have a little snacky something. But an early dinner, why is that a game changer?
For so many reasons, but I'll give you one. All right. We know someone asked you about cortisol as well, right?
We're going to come to Marianne's message
this
in a minute.
This is such an important thing. If you have your dinner early by 5:30, look, when you're ravenous, you're going to eat carbs, right? You're going to eat like a proper meal.
Yeah.
Or generally people do.
I just
about
eat
you.
Off my kids' plates and then I have something.
Oh my God.
Listen, okay. This is mem life. Yeah. I will eat the crust.
I am no one to judge because, you know, I don't know this. So yeah, you know. But anyway, so a lot of moms are listening as well. If you're going to have your dinner late and it's going to be heavy, which generally it is, your insulin goes up because your blood sugar goes up. We know this, right? This is basic. When insulin goes up, cortisol will go up. And cortisol and melatonin compete with each other.
And melatonin is what makes us sleepy.
Melatonin is what makes us sleep, right? So if I'm going to have heavy dinners, my melatonin goes up and then I can't sleep. Or my sleep architecture is really messed up. Even if I'm tired and I go to sleep, I'm not going to get my REM cycles in. So this is one of the biggest reasons I say have early dinner and then snack for dinner. Mm-hmm. Dates, nuts, Greek yogurt if that suits you, almond yogurt, I don't know, play. I have two truffles whenever I want, or like, you know, just something light. Because your sleep, once your sleep improves,
it all falls into place.
How many things change?
Rashi Chowdhury with us today. We are going to get the text line. We've got lots of messages coming in. Just been, I get to kind of 4 o'clock and I get a little bit nibbly. Luckily, Rashi Chowdhury's in the studio and she brought goodies. Tell us a little bit about the snacks. So that I know they started in your kitchen, but now they're all over Dubai.
I know. It's been a long journey and it's the best chocolate snack hack. What do we women want?
Chocolate.
Yeah, we love chocolate, but we don't want to we don't want to feel guilty. The minute we have chocolate, because of the refined sugar and all the nasties in it, we're just like, we can't enjoy it, right? It takes away from the pleasure. It
wasn't worth it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know? And if you overeat, then there's like, it's not a fun scene, right? And I wanted to eliminate that because I feel indulgence and guilt should not go together. Like, we want to have it all. So women who want to have it all, for them, it's the best chocolate snack hack.
Play.
Yes.
Do my voiceover voice. It's delicious. They're really, really delicious.
Love it.
Okay, we've been talking about hormone balancing and a message here from Marianne saying, I hear about cortisol a lot, but what is it? Is being less stressed the only way to reduce it? Thank you for any insights.
Wow. So let's start with, cortisol is such an important hormone and it's got a lot of bad rep, right? Right now, everyone thinks cortisol is the enemy. It's going to give me moon face and all of that stuff.
Moon face? I just think of like a round, like a bloated midsection. Moon face?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So
moon face. Now I've got something else to worry about. Fantastic, Rashi. Thanks.
Listen, you're doing fine. We know this.
So it's the stress hormone, right?
So cortisol is a stress hormone, but we need to understand that a minimum amount of stress is very important for us. When cortisol is balanced, it makes us feel alive and awake. Speak to a woman who wakes up in the morning, like I said, after sleeping for 8-10 hours and doesn't feel like she has the energy. That's your flatline cortisol, right? Mm. So we need cortisol. And when it's in the right amount, it really helps us, right? It's also anti-inflammatory in short bursts. It helps us grow and think differently and all of that stuff. But the problem is when it's too much. Mm. And I love giving this example. Like literally, we are so used to, because she's talking about, is it the only way, like stress management? Of course it's the only.
And people go, oh, just reduce your stress. And you're like, oh, I'll just do that then. That's so easy. Like, no, it's not that easy.
It's not, but also we're not that disciplined, right?
No.
Simple things like we spoke about early dinners. That alone will make sure melatonin comes in and cortisol goes down.
So you're getting that good quality sleep.
Yeah. Then a simple thing like, let's not get up in the morning and open our phone. Mm-hmm. I mean, but me saying it, I feel like a hypocrite because that's what I do.
Yeah, but Rashi, I've changed my ways.
Yeah.
I've changed my ways.
Yeah.
I'm not the stage now where I don't charge my phone in another room. I'm not, you know. I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
But I try to do a few things for maybe 5-10 minutes before I look at my phone in the morning.
It's so important to do that. That small switch.
I'm not going to lie. I've noticed absolutely zero difference yet.
How long has it been?
Like two months?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Come on.
No,
I'm
because
my best.
I think we need at least 30 minutes.
Oh, that's never going to happen.
I mean, I agree. But look, I don't do it, so I can't say it, right? But the times.
You're like, I don't like Sprouts, and I do look at my phone in the morning.
But I do eat really early dinners. Like a lot of my lifestyle is very set, which is what I really want to even talk about supplements. You know how people say not today, but we're jumping too many topics. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this cortisol, right? So there are a lot of things you can do to manage stress. And it doesn't mean you have to sit and do yoga or like meditate, because that's not
for everybody.
It's not for everybody. Also, it's very hard to meditate if you are very wired inside. Mm-hmm. When your HPA axis is dysregulated, you're in fight flight, it's very hard to meditate. You would be better off going for a walk. You'd be better off doing maybe a guided meditation. You know, you can't just... Anyway, so those are all small hacks. But I feel if you don't have that food first approach, it's very hard to fix all of this other stuff.
Rashi with us today. Have a little listen to this. Earlier, we got a voice note from Usma.
I'm lactose intolerant, so I really can't take the supplements and I can't eat milk or yogurt. So is there any other way I can get my calcium intake? And can I take any other form of probiotics that are natural? Thank you.
Good question. For any other lactose intolerance out there, Aunt Usma, what comes to mind?
So I think sesame seeds are on the list. She needs to have a teaspoon, up to a tablespoon a day, black and white together, because they have a lot of calcium. But I think with calcium, what's very important is to make sure, Usma, right? Her vitamin D levels need to be between 60 and 80. Without enough vitamin D, we don't absorb enough calcium. So even if you're having those calcium pills, and I'm a big believer in supplements, like you need to take them. So I feel with her, I don't know how old she is, but it's really important if she's about 35, she gets enough calcium supplement for sure. Also does the sesame seeds, does a whole lot of greens. And in general, I don't think we can look at calcium just by itself. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so many factors that come together, right? So I would say take the calcium pill for sure, and also make sure vitamin D is between 60 and 80, and start sesame seeds like ASAP.
Rashmi, we were just talking about sleep there. Message here saying, which would you pick? 8 hours of sleep and no exercise, or 6 hours of sleep and a workout? For weight loss, is sleep more important or working out?
I would go the first one. Sleep for 8 hours, don't work out. Because chances are, if this person is asking this question, chances are they already struggle with either very high or flatline cortisol. So when you have flatline, you're better off just not working out. You know?
What I would kind of caveat that with is 8 hours of good quality sleep.
100%. You're right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Because if you lose the 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. window, you've lost a lot already. Most people, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. is when the repair enzymes, restorative enzymes, growth hormone, which also helps for weight loss, is all secreted at that time.
Okay.
So sleep at 9:30, wake up at 3 a.m. if you want to, but like get that, you know, juice of sleep.
You need those four.
Yeah.
Varsha saying, hi both. She's saying, headline, belly fat in Asian body. Deeply frustrated by my shape in my 50s. I'm a healthy BMI just, but like most Asians, a tiny bit of extra fat goes straight to my belly. It's got even worse in menopause. I look pregnant, clothes look horrible. I had a super flat stomach until I crossed 45. Diabetes runs in the family too, but medically I've had investigations and all is good. I eat a healthy, lowish carb, exercise, don't eat sugar, blah, blah, blah. I could up the exercise, but it feels like it's too much work. Every Asian woman I know has a meno paunch, Fasha says. She says, even when I lose weight, it goes off my butt. I'm veggie most of the time, which makes it harder to up the protein, but would really welcome some advice. White doctors, nutritionists just don't seem to get it because white people store fat differently. Is that true?
I mean, to some extent, genetics do play a role, but like, I think genetics is just 20% or less now. You know, with epigenetics, we know this. But coming back to this case is interesting because if she's menopausal, I know we hate on our fat, but actually fat jumps in as a protective mechanism because fat starts to behave like an endocrine organ. Look, during menopause, perimenopause, towards the late end of perimenopause and early menopause, what happens is that your ovaries aren't secreting estrogen and progesterone, right? Who's doing it? Your fat jumps in as an endocrine organ. So your body is kind of holding on to the fat because it's like, at least I'm getting my progesterone and estrogen from here.
Somewhere.
A little bit. Exactly. I don't know all the other symptoms she's struggling with. She did mention low protein, right? That can, again, be a game changer for this woman. If she's able to have 25 to 30 grams of protein, 3 meals, it could really change a lot. If she's vegetarian, let's do a vegan source of protein, but like a pure pea protein isolate would do well. She has to make sure that the sweeteners coming in are not like
garbage. Things.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, upping the protein would really help. Doing some weight training would really protect her bones. And it's going to help with menopause because like we all lose calcium so easily around that time, right? What else?
Do you know what? I'm going to send her your Instagram. Would that be okay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, let's do that.
Yeah.
We have got, Osma just messaged going, she's saying she's 40. She's saying she's allergic to sesame seeds.
Oh, my God.
Any other alternatives? Oh, Osma.
Yeah. But again, Osma, I think for you, it's very important to get your vitamin D right, because then a lot of things will get sorted out.
Okay.
Right? So let's get that. Let's get, she can't do sesame. So almonds are great. Spinach, basically getting your greens in. Mm-hmm. And eating whole foods in general. I hate picking on one particular thing because also we forget about bioavailability, right? A lot of things it's not that bioavailable. You won't get all of it. So I think the key over here would be to get her vitamin D up.
And to the text line we go. Rashi, a message from a male listener, that's all I know, saying, I've been dealing with constipation for years. I poop daily, but without laxatives, I regularly get fissures. General surgeon has not suggested surgery. I'm working on my diet, adding more fruits and veggies. I'm having up to 6 servings a day. Increase my water take to more than 3.5 litres and have recently started working out. Could something be happening with my gut?
Yeah, this is really sad because we run this gut cleanse every 15 days and we have like more than 500 people who join in a month, you know. And with all of that data, we've realized that, you know, people who struggle with constipation, this is chronic constipation for years on end, this could possibly be methane-dominated SIBO, and he can run some tests to figure this out. It's not something that can be taken lightly because he's already on laxative, right? I'm guessing he must be on Dulcolax or something. It's not a good scene because if he's so dependent, he basically has lazy bowels.
I was about
now.
To say your body forgets how to poop.
Absolutely.
So what's your first port of call then? Do you, you know, what kind of internal specialist would you go and see? What would you recommend?
I mean, I think what I would recommend for him to do, because I don't know what he's doing with his food, because it seems like he's just upped his fiber a lot. And a lot of times that does not work for constipation, makes it worse. Because if you have dysbiosis, which means too much bad bacteria and less good bacteria, which is where he is, you don't have enough cellulase, or we don't have cellulase to digest cellulose. So if he's already struggling, cellulose is from the vegetables and fruits. So those might bloat him. A lot of people with gut issues will be like, every time I eat vegetables, I bloat. It's not good for me. Or I'm not able to eat the vegetables, you know. Or if I eat raw stuff, I bloat. Or I have gas and things like that. Now with him, it's going to be a very slow process because I would, number one, eliminate a couple of things that he's eating for a while and put him on a proper therapeutic diet for like 12 weeks continuously. Which means I would cut off, I don't know if he's on gluten. Would he reply? Because it'll be interesting to see if he's having gluten in. You don't know that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
If you're out there, mystery man.
But yeah, gluten, dairy, maybe even lentils. These are things that I would cut off for a while to see how his body responds. I would definitely add chia seeds, although I don't have too much hope with this case because it's very advanced. But sometimes it could help. If he eliminates a whole lot of things, doesn't have so much vegetables and fruit, he could actually do really well with a lot of avocados, a lot of ghee, butter, to use those as laxatives. I would 100% add prunes, but soaked overnight, 6 to 8 prunes. They have sorbitol. I mean, you put them in water, that gets activated, works like a laxative. So I would do those type of things, or just give prune juice if he can't have the prunes, you know. There are a lot of things we can do, but like, this is a tough case. Like, this requires more than just like a conversation here.
Well, mystery man, I'm replying to you right now with Rashi's details. If you want to send me the word health, anyone else, I will hook you up. We've run out of time. Here's my last question though to you. For the people of the UAE, Rashi Chaudhry, you have the microphone, you have the platform. What would you love to see everybody listening today do, take, change, eliminate, reduce, adjust for the good of our gut health?
Wow, I think the first thing, the one thing that I always talk about is fat first. Switch, make this one switch for 2 weeks. See if you feel better. And I think the second thing would be, as much as we can, let's do early dinners. Let's just do it, you know.
So here are my big takeaways from the show today. We need to ban piñatas from kids' birthday parties, and we all need to be eating dinner before 6 p.m.
Most days, 4 times, 3 times.
I'm sold.
Let's make a start.
Yeah. Rashi, thank you so much for your help. I've had so many people asking for your details. I've really enjoyed our chat. I love following you on Instagram, as do hundreds of thousands of people. Will you come back?
Oh my God, I'd love to. You know this. I love coming and chatting with you, Helen. Sold. It's so nice. It's always so nice.
Rashi, an absolute pleasure. And thank you for the treats.
Thank you.
I will accept your bribery of play chocolate truffles, which are available across the UAE. Right now, we're joined by Susan Sarek, the co-founder of Some by Durham Stretch, discussing a topic that resonates with many parents: kids' birthday parties. Is it just me, or do these celebrations seem to be getting more and more extravagant and expensive every year, putting huge financial pressure on families? So we're going to be talking about how to create some memorable but value-driven moments without breaking the bank, and how parents can respond to what might seem like quite unreasonable requests. Susan, how are you?
Good, Helen. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Now, I put this on my Instagram earlier, and it was a bit of a leading question, which was, are kids' birthday parties getting out of hand? And having a quick look, I had a lot of messages that said, one saying yes with about 10 S's, one saying yes with about 10 exclamation marks. Crazy, unnecessary, expensive, pressure is so high for parents, and don't get me started on return gifts. They cost an absolute fortune. What are we teaching these kids? Absolutely. John saying it's the parents who by proxy who are allowing it. Sabina saying 1,000%. I did two home parties this year and both my boys and their friends loved it. So clearly tapping into a bit of a hot topic here. From your perspective, how do you feel like kids' birthday parties have evolved over the year? And do you feel like this is a Dubai issue or a global problem?
Look, first of all, I definitely think it's probably a global issue. It's not just Dubai, but I feel like we're doing it to ourselves, right? Like I remember my birthday parties growing up, we didn't have anything elaborate or exciting. It was very much at home and it was with my friends. And I used to have the best times and I have the best memories from those birthday parties. And I think that's what we need to go back and focus on, is creating those memories and not worry about having to spend on entertainment and decor, because that's not what kids are going to remember.
So true. So true. I like this point about return gifts, so those party favours, because that can be a massive financial, you know, part of that budget. But I remember, I mean, God, I sound like such a granny. Back in my day, it would literally, your party favour would be a piece of birthday cake wrapped in a napkin, put in a bag if you were lucky. And now it's like, it's this and it's that. And I would say, no disrespect to any of the parties that my kids have been to recently, most of the party favours you get are literally just bags full of plastic garbage that will find itself in the bin in the next week. I don't mind the odd bit of candy, that's fine. But it's like the plastic junk, you just putting it in to fill up a bag. This sounds very smug, and I'm just going to say it anyway because it's true. But for the first few years of our daughters, we wrapped up books. We went to Bookworm to like their, they had like a sale shop, and we would buy books for 10, 15 dirhams and wrap them up and do like a kind of a lucky dip that a kid would take out of a bag as they left the party. And I'm like, there you go. You had a slice of cake. You got a book. I think everyone should be happy. But what about that pressure there? Where is that pressure coming from, Susan, to have these elaborate parties?
Again, I think parents are just doing it to themselves. Like, they're trying to compete within themselves and who can do the better party favors, and just like, they need to really take that step back and really think about it, because I completely agree. The candy is unnecessary. And I don't know about you, but whenever my kids bring back candy, I end up hiding that stuff and I make sure that they forget about it. And
they're never going to forget about it. They're like, Mummy, where's that Milky Way that I got in so-and-so's party bag?
Oh, yeah.
I ate that.
Look, it definitely doesn't have to be elaborate. And I remember taking back home that piece of cake and I was so excited as a child, and we need to instill that back into our kids as well.
But how, when you've got kids going, oh, so-and-so's party's at this place and so-and-so got a limo to this party, you know, message here going, kids' party's been out of hand for the last 20 years. It's certainly not a modern thing, but there's definitely more choice here in Dubai when we think about some of the amazing venues. So how do you suggest discussing financial pressures, you know, amongst yourselves as a couple? Or, you know, I'm certainly not saying we should say to our children, we can't afford to do that. But how can we say to them, you might have gone to this party, but that's not on the cards for our family?
Yeah, I suppose from that point of view, you've got to be a bit upfront, I suppose, with your children. And I think it also you need to have a bit of creativity to be able to come up with a plan B for your child, to go, okay, perhaps don't tell them what you can't have, but tell them what you can have, you know. Tell them that you can have a park party, and with that we can create some sort of games or activities that you can have fun with, and like, get them involved into something that they're going to create.
at a cheaper price for the parents. Like, as an example, I had a birthday party for my son a few years back. It was a garden party, and we created an obstacle course for the kids. And we timed all of them as they came across, and it created all this excitement. And my son still, and his friends still remember to this day, this obstacle course that got them all excited. So they're the things that, yes, it does require a bit of foresight, a bit of creativity, but you can create such good parties without having to spend anything at all.
Do you know what? My daughter went to a birthday party just on Sunday, and it was a cooking party, and it was a friend's house. I think there was eight of them, and they learned, I love this so much for so many reasons. They learned how to make bread. So she came home with a bread roll that she'd made. Should have seen how proud my seven-year-old was. They decorated cookies, and then they did kind of stamping on an apron. So she came home with her own personalised apron and a bread roll and a decorated cookie. And I was like, that is so smart. I really, really loved it. Message here saying, I refuse party favours. Find it ridiculous in a waste. Not part of my culture at all. And I'm not giving in. Helen, I would be super happy if my kids got a wrapped up book. Susan is with us, the co-founder of Some by Dirham Stretcher. And lots of messages coming in on this topic about curbing costs and some great ideas as well. One saying, I love giving personalised items, bottles, fidget spinners, books that surely don't get tossed in a week. Thank you. I've also had a bit of a shout out of a venue here saying Katubna Cultural Centre has just launched some affordable birthday parties. Nadal Hamar, and they do art and cultural experiences starting from 300 dirhams, space rental, sound system and cleanup, and can all be customised. Thank you for that. Susan, what other recommendations do you have from the community about places to go, things to keep kids? You know, how we want our kids to have an amazing celebratory time. I just don't want to be like $5,000 in the hole for them. What other ideas have you guys had in the past?
With birthday parties, I mean, you always have to have a cake, for example. And I think my go-to, instead of going for a lavish birthday cake, which can also cost a lot, to say the very least, is donuts.
Me too. That's what we did for both of our kids this year.
I do it every single year because kids absolutely love a donut. They will eat the donut, and you can make it, you can create this like pyramid of donuts that looks so cool. And kids love it, and it's so much cheaper.
I actually end up buying, this is really embarrassing, for like 35 dirhams, a donut wall. So it's got little hooks that you put them on. Certain apps in the UAE often have deals where it's like buy a dozen donuts, get a dozen free. And because I just feel like you can spend hundreds on a cake and kids don't really eat it that much. And then you've got half a cake in your fridge and then it goes in the bin. I'm with you on that 100% with donuts. I had to ask my husband what we did for our kids' birthday parties earlier this year. How embarrassing is that? So for our oldest one, she wanted a pool party. So she had 10 people over to use our compound pool, and we hired for about, I think it was about 500 dirhams, this huge inflatable slide, and we got it for the whole afternoon, and they were just up and down that. And then we ordered pizzas, and it was a donut. And then for my other one, we went to the place where she does her gymnastics lesson, and they did a gymnastics lesson for her and her friends. And then we went next door to Pizza Express, and it was buy one, get one free on pizzas as well.
Amazing.
You can feel a theme coming on. Message here saying, last time for my daughter's birthday party, I had someone win past the parcel. She got the gift and said, it's not good enough. Could she get something better? This was about a 60 dirham toy. After the party, a kid also said, where's my party bag? Kids are expecting a lot. It's hard to go against the grain. I'm all for a cheap party at our place, but kids are expecting candy and gifts to be thrown at them. On that note, can we please have a Dubai-wide ban on piñatas? Please. No good comes of a piñata. It brings out the worst in kids. It's violence. They fall on each other. Someone always bangs their head and ends up crying. Someone always comes up with an empty hand of candy. If we could all just get on the same page and ban piñatas, I would be very, very grateful indeed.
But we can start this, Helen.
Come on. Come on, the Helen and Susan campaign. Any other apps and we can name some apps. I'll tell you, we got the donuts from Entertainer app. It was buy one, get one free on Krispy Kremes. Any advice on, I don't know, days of the week or, you know, kind of any hacks on getting good deals, soft launches of places, any apps that you like or any discounts that people are getting within the Dirham Stretcher community?
Yeah, so obviously, first of all, you can go to our website, sum.ae, and just type in birthday, and you'll get a whole lot of different discounts and offers there, from food to venues, activities. We have a whole list of them. Another one that a lot of people seem to have these days is Faza. If you do have the Faza card, have a look, because there are some great offers on there as well. Just have a look, you know, in
I'm on the website right now.
you're typing in birthday parties.
Yeah, I am.
All prepared.
Yeah, well, it's my birthday tomorrow. I'm just saying, it's not just about the kids.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you very much. I will be here. I'll be right here. But I think, and also just, I think it's where I think it can get really difficult, and I'm going to speak really frankly now, is when you have kids who are mixing, where you've got parents of different earning and spending powers, right? Like, and when my kids get invited to amazing birthday parties, I'm like, yeah, go for it. It's not somewhere that I would ever have a kid's birthday party at, because it's going to be way too expensive, but I want you to go along and have that experience and enjoy it. But this is just how we have birthdays in our house. You know, they probably will be at home.
Yeah.
They might be, you know, in the Safford Two Park getting mentioned there as well. And just, you know, saying it's not really a priority for us to be having the, you know, a 20-foot balloon arch, to be honest. It's sum.ae. Sorry, just more, another message here saying, another tip is for other kids' birthday, buy things on sale, have a cupboard full of presents that are ready to go. Yes, yes.
Oh, I love that. Yes.
Love it. Okay. Thank you.
I do that all the time.
I really didn't mean to get too stressed out about the pinatas, but I feel really, really strongly about it. sum.ae, and of course, Durham Stretch Community, really, really great at sharing some of the deals around Dubai. So thank you, Susan. Really, really appreciate your time. Wishing you a lovely weekend ahead and a fantastic summer too. sum.ae, to see some of the discounts over there with Durham Stretcher. Again, I apologise, but I just feel like we've seen some pinata-related injuries in our household, okay? That's all I'm going to say. Kids in a stick and a candy. It's not a happy combination. Delving into the growing trend of self-diagnosis on TikTok and other social media platforms, millions of users are turning to these platforms for mental health information. But concerns are rising about the accuracy and impact of the self-diagnosis. We're going to be exploring the reasons behind this phenomenon, the potential risks involved, and how parents can guide their children towards reliable mental health resources. So stay with us. We're discussing this with our expert guest, Jocelyn Grethius, with us today, psychologist at Thrive Wellbeing Centre. I don't know if this is just the echo chamber that I'm in, Jocelyn, but I feel like you cannot get an appointment with a psychologist for love nor money right now. You're a very busy breed. What's going on? What's coming into clinic for you?
So much, right? I think anything, everything that has to do with our mental health, our day-to-day functioning. I think we have so much on our plate right now, mm-hmm. right? And again, talking about our fight-flight response, which was, you know, it's our very historic response. And that was a response that is needed for survival. And that's the same response that is up right now when our survival is not at threat.
When you get an SMS or a WhatsApp from your boss.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So overwhelm.
It is.
Because I have therapy once a week and I have it on a Wednesday morning. And yesterday I was like, I've just got too much to do. Like, I can't justify 15-minute drive there, an hour there, and 15-minute drive back. And I was like, I think you're missing the point, Helen. You might just need to prioritise this. So here's my question then. In light of the amount of conversations happening on social media about mental health, and don't get me wrong, I think some of it is hugely positive, because I feel like there's a lot of raised awareness around it. You've got people finding their tribe potentially. Do you find people coming into clinic with a diagnosis in mind and maybe their phone in their hand based on the social media they've been consuming?
A lot, actually. I see this happening quite a lot. And you're right, there are some good sources out there as well that are putting in some very well-researched material. Very well-researched psychologists are also on social media and they are doing their bit of awareness. And so I think the word is balance. If you look at us as humans and you see our entire progression, you know, for a very long period of time, when we see something being a problem, we are very eager to jump to the other side of the extreme. And I think the word what we need is balance. And if you look at trends, they come from that place, from having completely no awareness to mental health. Mm-hmm. Now, every bit of information being used for
and
that.
And I think the pandemic really sped that up. It really yes. did. And, you know, obviously spread of knowledge, you know, how interconnected we are, how any, you know, any moron with an Instagram platform can put some kind of expert in their bio and have people follow them, and they can be spreading misinformation even if they believe it to be true.
Right.
It's this idea of coming there with a critical mind of going, what is this person potentially selling me?
Yes.
And if, you know, whether that is a program or a workshop or a supplement or, you know, whatever that might be. And what are their credentials? Because as you say, there are people who are, you know, really fantastic educators on different platforms, but there's an awful lot of self-proclaimed experts too. Can I ask you then, how do you think, you know, influencers, and I'm not talking about experts, influencers can help shape public understanding then of mental health and maybe lead to misdiagnosis?
I think it all starts with our belief system. So if you look at the word algorithm, right? In when you're using social media, you see everything that you like is what your social media is filled with. Mm-hmm. And that is...
Mine is Cocker Spaniel Puppies and Pedro Pascal.
Yeah, so there you go. You no prove my thing. Point. You definitely prove my point here. So that comes from our likes. Mm-hmm. And all our likes come from our belief system. Now, it's very important to understand that our entire growth from the time we are born up until today, that belief system is it has one vision for us, right? It's something we believe in. Mm-hmm. And that is what is making us function. That is what is making us believe in something very specific. You know, when I'm explaining this, I always explain a kid's toy that has all shapes, and a triangle will not go through a square, mm-hmm. right? So it's very simple that we have these cutouts and we take in information that would exactly fit those cutouts.
So sometimes we can have this kind of confirmation bias as well. We find ourselves looking for or resonating with things that that back up our belief system.
Exactly.
And it can take us sometimes down a bit of an inaccurate road, which is what I want to talk about next, especially with teens, because I feel like with more chat around social media, there this sense of wanting to belong, this idea of I'm on the spectrum too, I have ADHD too, I have anxiety too, you know, this idea of wanting to fit together. We've got psychologist at Thrive Wellbeing Centre, Jocelyn Grethius, is with us today. And I think we kind of want to ask you about what are some of the most common things that you feel social media is, I was going to say promoting, but I guess maybe propaganda, you know, is shining the light on, let's just say. So when people are coming to you and they're saying, oh, I saw this video, da, 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 is it being on the spectrum? Is it ADHD? Is it depression? Is it anxiety? And how accurate do you think people are at recognizing some things they're seeing on social in themselves?
Right. I think the most common one that I hear quite a lot is OCD.
Massively
misused. I hear things like, I'm very clean, I have OCD. I'm very, you know, organized, I have OCD. You know, being clean and organized, the good traits, I don't see why they should be put into a diagnosis, right? Again, see, what we need to understand about this is when I'm talking about this topic, my there's a part of me that's going, hey, you also make sure that people who have OCD don't feel like, oh, maybe I'm just making this up, mm-hmm. or, you know, so it's a very, that's why the word balanced, mm-hmm. you know, we need to understand, and that's where the role of professionals will also come into play. And finding the right form of research and re-research.
Can I ask you about anxiety? Because this, and I ask because it's obviously the thrust of the new Inside Out 2 film, which I really, really enjoyed, loved it. And it's something that I've genuinely suffered from in the past. But I feel like we're very quick to put this anxiety label on ourselves and on kids and on teens. Whereas if we're being honest, back in the day, it would be like, oh, you know, she's a bit of a worrier. now it's, oh, it's an anxiety disorder. And when someone is feeling anxious or they're suffering with some range of anxiety, when is it a problem, Jocelyn? Like, when would you seek out professional help?
So if you use the DSM, which is what we use as a diagnostic manual, right, you have to, it has to affect your functionality and the worrying. So if it is very general, then and if you want to give the diagnosis of GAD, which is generalized anxiety disorder, it has to be for more than 6 months.
Oh gosh, wow.
Right? So basically, it's something that you can see that your day-to-day life is really, really affected by. Mm-hmm. And this is why, and you know, I know there are, in psychology and even as professionals, the word diagnosis is seen differently. And me as a psychologist, for me, that is the signs, the symptoms. That's what I focus on, right? So for everybody, a diagnosis like, for example, GAD, the signs are very different in different people. So if I don't focus on that and if I just focus on the diagnosis, then I'm giving them a very not so tailor-made therapy process.
Makes sense.
Right?
What about children and teens in particular, who are spending a lot of time on social media, who might come to their parents and say, I follow this person, I've seen this video, I think I have, for example, ADHD. How do you talk to our kids about, you know, getting reliable mental health resources? When do we start taking things seriously in our young people?
Right. Now, see, you've brought up a diagnosis like ADHD. There is so much research that says that trauma, if you have childhood trauma, attachment trauma, any form of trauma, also mimic very similar symptoms of ADHD. So now you tell me, when someone is on social media, especially a child or a teen, and they're watching all of these symptoms being listed into a lovely reel, which has this amazing background music, and relating to it, but it could just be an attachment wound, right? And again, I'm not trying to say, so then does that mean that ADHD doesn't exist? No, it just means that you need to go through a proper channel of assessment. Mm-hmm. Even when I speak to my clients, I say, you know, a lot of your symptoms sound like ADHD. I really think you should take the assessment to confirm or deny that.
To what extent, and I just touched on this earlier, do you feel like there can be a bit of bandwagon jumping when it comes to teens and social media? Because I worry that we've kind of gone too far in the direction. We weren't talking about mental health enough. And now it's like, oh God, I feel like everyone's got a label or wants a label. Whether that can be to do with the sense of fitting in, or I think, you know, a sense of the dramatic sometimes as well. Do you see this and you go, actually, you're fine. What you're experiencing are very normal worries about exams, or, you know, here are some coping strategies we can put in place, rather than giving you a diagnostic label.
Right. So even looking at that, right, you're absolutely right. We have come to a place where everything seems very problematic. And mind you, and you've said you watched the movie, and of course you know this too, that anxiety is an emotion, right? Before it turning into a diagnosis, it is an emotion. So you're going, like before doing this interview, I had my nerves up.
What's your coping strategy, Jocelyn?
I actually love putting my hand on my chest and saying, I'm safe, I'm okay, and I love doing this, so I really want to do this.
And Helen's nice.
Helen's nice. I told you this already when I got in here. Your face really helps to, you know, calm those nerves. So yeah, and
self-talk.
And, yeah, a lot of self-talk and using connections. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll message important people saying I'm doing this and I'm a little, you know, nervous about it. And, you know, and the support that I get really, yeah, really calms me down as well. So when I say we focus on diagnosis, for us as therapists, as psychologists, we're very focused on what does that look like for you? Mm-hmm. You know, what part of your life is affected by this? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we go. Because even if you look at a diagnosis of depression, if you open the DSM or ICD and, you know, you kind of go through, you see so many parts of mood disorders that fall under the topic
exactly.
of, like SAD, you know, right now it's so hot right mm-hmm. now, seasonal affective disorder. And you know, that can really, really bring you down.
I'm such a hypocrite because I listened to a podcast the other day and it was talking about being a high functioning depressive. And I listened to it and I was like, well, that's me. So I'm also self-diagnosing. But as you say, there's, you know, such a huge range. You say you're suffering from depression. It can be SAD, it can be postnatal depression. You might not be able to get out of bed and are clinically depressed where only medication can really get you out of that space. I guess what I'm saying is proceed with caution. You know, curate your online space. Are there anyone that we could point people to in terms of experts that you really like? Any podcasts or books you think actually you're not just someone who's stuck, you know, coach right. in their Instagram bio?
Right. So, I mean, I always have so many book recommendations. I think I always direct people to self-work. And if you ask me for book recommendations, Transcending Trauma by Dr. Frank Anderson, really love that book. Radical Compassion by Dr. Tara Brach. Like, I think books that can help you understand yourself better mm-hmm. so that your pre-existing belief system that is a bit problematic and is causing you to have this tunnel vision to then go out and diagnose yourself, or rather misdiagnose yourself or self-diagnose and not go to the right sources.
Makes sense. Jocelyn, thank you so much. You, as I said, I know how busy you and the team are at Thrive, so I really appreciate your time today. Have a lovely, lovely summer, and we'll hopefully speak to you very soon indeed. Special guest with us today, John Bell, the founding principal of Bloom World Academy, in the hot seat making headlines as the first school in the UAE to introduce a comprehensive artificial intelligence BTEC qualification. It's for students aged 14 and up. So really pioneering initiative, obviously aligning with Dubai's vision to lead in AI adoption and innovation. It's going to be starting, I keep on wanting to say September, but lots of schools starting in August. It's going to be a compulsory part of the curriculum for senior students. Mr. Bell? Oh, John, you're a teacher. Mr. Bell, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You've got a couple more days left at Bloom, finishing up tomorrow, I believe.
Yeah, tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow lunchtime. Yeah, we're doing okay. We're still going.
Looking back, I feel like this year's gone really, really quickly.
Yeah, it has, hasn't it?
I feel like it's been a really, apart from disruptions, which, watery disruptions, what have some of your kind of been big highlights of this last year been, whether it's Dubai or academically in the school? Mm. You know, when you look back, those moments of pride?
Well, huge pride, actually, because obviously this year, Bloom World Academy, I mean, We've grown as we wanted to. My biggest joy at the moment is just the multinationality we've got going on. Every children from everywhere, and so that's been, and it's, the dream has come true. Dare I say? You know, that I'm quite serious. You know, we've had all sorts of things. Last night we had our sports personality awards, and we had our first big production of Legally Blonde on Monday and Tuesday night. And you know, if you'd asked me 18 months ago, given we were a new school, given you know we said we would do these things, you know, the sense of pride of having, you know, done them. It's staggering, really.
You've got some very happy parents, by the way.
I've got
friends who have students in your school.
Thank you.
And I always feel like parents are the biggest adverts and advocates in some ways.
Yeah.
For anyone that's not familiar with Bloom, what do you think your kind of point of difference, you know, your DNA is? And I think sometimes we have a new school and the people set out these very kind of, you know, headline, you know, points of difference, and then sometimes that can get a bit diluted or lost along the way.
Absolutely.
But I feel like that hasn't been the case with you guys.
Not at all. No, I mean, I think our point of difference, if you like, has always been that we've claimed to be different, but in a measured kind of way. You know, we do different if it makes a difference to children. So literally everything we do from the start time, you know, the later start time, through to the choices we give children all day long, through to how we report to parents, to this initiative around AI, is sort of, does it make a difference? People talk about being progressive. We get, you know, accused politely or labelled with being progressive. It's not. It's just being relevant. And schools in Dubai, some are not relevant and some are quite, you know, it's a controversial statement, but I'll say it anyway. You know, you can get stuck. You can get stuck with a caricature of a kind of education. Mm-hmm. Is it relevant for 2024? Is it relevant for these youngsters who will be working in the 2030s? And so we try to do all of that. It's not all about work, though. It's about fun on the journey. It's about genuinely, for me, what I wanted to do in returning to lead a school was to put parents at the helm and stop fighting the good fight that goes on in so many schools about school versus parent. Mm-hmm. So we've done all of what we said we would do. And, you know, I think ultimately the point of reference, as you say, the DNA moment is that I'm probably the least creative person in the school now. You know, I started with all these ideas, but the ideas are pouring in.
That's wonderful.
From everyone else.
It's become an environment.
Yeah,
just
so you created this environment where both the children and the sense of loyalty to the school is you know, everywhere I go, people are popping up at, you know, supermarket shelves and things. And it's just sort of grown, and it's solid. And I'm very proud that we've said we would do it, and we've done it.
We have been talking about education a lot this week, and I guess I just wanted to use this platform and this microphone to say a huge well done to all the teachers. In general, in life, we've been really lucky with our girls' teachers, yeah. And we have actually been historically, but this year in particular. And I just feel like it's. I know people get the cards and the vouchers and the mugs and all the rest of it, but I mean, the impact that these people have on our children's life is just incredible. I think it's a very, very hard job, one that I could never, ever, ever do. And just kudos to all of you educators out there today. Enjoy your summer. So, Mr. Bell, let's elaborate on this. Bloom World Academy is launching AI B-Tech, obviously aligning with that Dubai vision to lead in AI adoption. So tell us a little bit about that decision and why are you making it a compulsory part of the 14 plus?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it was the slightly bigger picture is, you know, AI is here. It's come steaming in the room, actually, in the last probably 18 months, a year or so, everywhere. And everybody's talking about ChatGPT onwards. But there's many, many more things going on out there. So first and foremost, it was about just what the policy for the school is. You know, what is our policy? What is our relationship with AI as a school? And that was philosophical to some extent. We talked about the values, you know, the values of honesty, integrity. One of our values is authenticity. And that leads you down a road to talk about children's self-discipline, about how they present their work or how they, you know, they learn. And IB, we're an IB school. We're very fortunate. We're now a world school, you know, record time. We've achieved that. And I really got to think about ultimately, you know, there's a massive emphasis on children researching in, you know, all the thing we've heard about fake news, you know, your business, you know, what's real, what's not.
Mm-hmm. Having that critical mind.
So we got into thinking about all the way through. So we have how do teachers use AI? And they use it a lot in our school already for, you know, particularly planning purposes. Mm-hmm. And it's great. It's really great. It speeds up things. How does that impact on children? Now, there are lots of statistics flying around. For example, you know, Turnitin, which many schools use as a plagiarism, you know, it checks work, but they estimate 22 million pieces of work being submitted in the last year have probably been plagiarized. So we get into a really awkward relationship with technology. Mm-hmm. So I thought, and the team thought, you know, let's go after this seriously. Let's really look at how we educate, particularly the older students. Now, we have a very, you know, lukewarm relationship with AI with youngsters below the age of 14. It is teacher led. It's almost like your film censorship. Mm-hmm. You know that we will regulate that, but after 14, in a way, they're able to use it. And how do they use it? So we felt the best way was to formally teach it.
We're going to talk about what that actually looks like in practice next. Joining us in studio, founding principal of Bloom World Academy, John Bell, talking about the BTEC qualification that's going to be coming into play very, very soon indeed. John, I wanted to ask you, the course is going to be covering obviously some real world applications of AI in various industries. And as you said before, the students you're teaching now are going to be out in the world and doing jobs that probably don't exist yet. So what about some specific examples of projects or partnerships? You know, how can we be agile enough to keep up with AI? You know, what are these students going to be learning?
Well, I think fundamentally it's all about the word prompt. It depends, you know, students need to know how to prompt AI to get the response they want. And, you know, at the moment, because it trawls the internet, you know, it trawls everything on the internet and comes back with an answer. And it's, I heard an analogy the other day about it's like a likable puppy. It wants to please. It will give AI will give you information back, but you've got to be careful of the question you ask. So the whole idea about our BTEC program, level 3, by the way, which means children are getting at 14, you know, will end up with university friendly qualifications. This will be registered. And this is one of the reasons for doing it. It's about to fast track some of the, you know, points of difference as you apply to university. But more broadly, it was about, you know, asking students or questioning students about their relationship with technology. So there's the ethics side, you know,
huge.
And, you know, trusting yourself and being you, and the only way you end up, you know, being you, will be sometimes not using technology. Mm-hmm. Then we are looking at, to answer the question directly, the relationship with how AI is used in industry, particularly research, and it can predict. It's a predictor, and how to best to use. And the important thing, that's okay, but really if you bring it back to school, AI, the most, you know, the beautiful, dare I use that word, example I've seen recently is when children are having conversations using AI with historical figures.
I've never heard
of
that.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And so you can bring a historical figure to life and you can ask them questions, get their responses, because obviously what AI does is trawl every bit of literature out there and say, well, how would they respond?
That is really interesting.
Exactly,
to think,
yeah.
You know, what would William Shakespeare think about a robot writing
exactly,
a script?
Exactly. And then you've got, you know, examples about, you know, a really good one I saw recently about Winston Churchill, about his reasoning. He's reasoning where he got to before ultimately, you know, going into war effectively. So, you know, whoa, it's mind-blowing. But you need to ask the right prompt. So you've got all of that. So you've got that. So it's not just about, am I going to work in a factory or am I going to work in a company that uses AI to speed up processes? It's about how to open up creativity. Mm-hmm. Now, it can do things for you all the time, but you know, I think study-wise, old-fashioned term, study-wise, to be able to use AI to have conversations with historical figures, to be able to predict once you give your suggestions about what your suggestions may look like into the future. Mm-hmm. And that's what it will do. So the last part of what we do is actually teach children to actually physically program. Now, we do that already. But so there are three elements. There's the real-world application, study application, if you like, ethics, and also being able to build your own AI. Certainly, you know, many schools do this. This is not new, but, you know, robotics and things like this, where AI will help you, enable you to create things which, you know, you can put the prompts in and it will do the rest for you. But, you know, it's that objectivity and honesty that children really need to understand behind all this.
Do you worry about traditional subjects, you know, core educational values being overshadowed by cutting-edge technology?
Completely the other way around. Completely. I think an ethical organisation, which Bloom World Academy is, you know, we talk every day about, you know, our values, you know, real values, like altruism, you know, much needed in Dubai, you know, that we're actually quite well off here, aren't we? Mm-hmm. All those kind of stuff. But as I mentioned, authenticity, we do that regularly anyway. But the whole fundamental issue about AI is that you can use it in studying in subjects where you wouldn't think you can use it. And everybody thinks it's scientific, everything is innovative. Those words get used so often. But you can use it with history, you can use it with humanity, you can use it with sport.
Music.
You can use the music stuff, fantastic. Mm. I mean, if the youngsters are wanting to genuinely be creative, using AI to support them. But the relationship between them, it's just a third party comes into the room, the relationship between the teacher, the student, and the third person in the room, metaphorically speaking, is AI. And look, you've got to be, you know, teachers, as I mentioned earlier, and throughout Dubai, no doubt, teachers are using AI, either officially or unofficially. It's just a case of, I genuinely think, if we're going to do this, let's do it well, let's do it through qualification, let's do it through an opportunity for children to explore with, you know, it's like the bowling alley analogy, that we are putting the bumpers up on the side of the bowling alley and they will roll the ball down, the AI ball, and it will bounce off the sides. But we're, you know, we are providing those sides for them at the moment.
Can I ask lastly about the agility, you know, about things are moving so, so fast and presumably you might teach one thing and in 6 months' time that might be redundant. How do you stay current? And I guess ultimately, how are we measuring the long-term impact of the AI BTEC course?
Well, I think current's an interesting concept. I think relevance is a good word. How do you stay relevant? Relevant is, you know, if you know your past, you'll know your future. So, you know, my other analogy with this, of course, is ultimately we won't, as older educators, stay relevant unless we are genuinely looking at what youngsters are doing.
Absolutely agree.
And they are so doing it.
Because that gap just gets bigger and
bigger. And bigger. And so unless we really look at what they're doing, you know, and embrace it to some extent in their learning, and, you know, not to make judgments, so many judgments about the negative use of technology. Mm. But how do you stay relevant? Look, I think the biggest question in Dubai is really simple, actually, for me, and we do this at Bloom World Academy a lot, and parents really, really like that, is whose history do you teach? Whose geography do you teach? Whose social, you know...
Yeah, what lens are we looking through?
Exactly. So
coming to that question, it's the last one we've got time for. Rana saying, great topic. Question for Mr. Bell. What role can the parents play in the journey of their kids learning and growing with AI? That's from Rana. And it comes back to your point earlier about parents and teachers being on the same team. So what would you love people listening today, whether they're, you know, students and parents at Bloom or not, be doing to really kind of foster that together?
I think, you know, if you came to Bloom World Academy, you would come to our parent workshops, which we run on AI. So, you know, exactly the same as students do. And you can do the course with the students. So, you know, ultimately you can get a BTEC level 3 with us, you know. So that would be my first answer.
You might hear from me.
Yeah, right. But the other one you can do is generally look, press the buttons yourself, read about AI, read about what it really can be. You know, once you realize all it's doing is trawling the internet. All it's doing is trying to please you. Once you realize that as a parent, you'll be less... let's be honest, listen to your child. Have a chat with them about what they're looking at.
Yeah, what their understanding is.
What they're looking at and what they're seeing and what they're doing.
It's a choice to turn towards it. It really, really is.
Absolutely.
John Bell, thank you so much. Enjoy your summer. Well-deserved break, sir.
Thank you.
And fantastic to hear about what's been happening. Joining us from Kids App, that's Kids with a Q app, we have got Claudia. She's a mum of three and we are talking about some good value, great propositions when it comes to children's summer camps. And I feel like we're a bit spoiled for choice now. We've seen a real opening up. It's not just your kind of typical multi-sports academy. It's now becoming... I've seen camps for life skills. I've seen language camps. My kids are going boxing all next week. Get the aggression out. Have you seen more this year as well, Claudia?
Yeah, there are quite a lot of different options and we were surprised. And there is one that is especially cool in the Shindaha Museum, which they teach the kids how ancestors used to live here and how they would accommodate the weather. So they have every day a different skill and they learn about different things, how they used to live without air conditioning, so how they were creating the air currents, how they were dealing with water.
Wow, like a historical summer camp.
Amazing. It's such cool. And then they go one day fishing and they go to see how they were cultivating pearls and the oysters. So it's really different. It's really not seen before.
This is the Heritage Camp at Shindaga Museum.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So this is what I'm talking about. It can be a bit different because what I've seen with friends in the past is kids who are really reluctant to go to camp because maybe they're not really into sports. You know, maybe they just haven't found one that matches their interests as well. So we're kind of opening it up a little bit. What have you noticed that's popular on the platform right now? Like what's trending, whether it's camps or otherwise? What's kind of got people attention in Dubai right now, Claudia?
Look, for younger kids, we have adventure parks they have an amazing offer. You pay 170 dirhams and you have unlimited access for 5 days. So it's really, really good value.
Where?
Adventure parks.
Is that the one?
In Al Wasl, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in Jumeirah.
That's really close to my house.
And it's really good because you have the zip line, you have different things.
They've got the ropes on different levels.
Exactly. So it's really, really good.
We shouldn't have told people that one because that I'm actually going to sign my kids up for that. So that's Adventure Parks. We should say it's Parks with an X. It's got a great little cafe.
Which is a plus also.
Yeah, because you can sit and do some work if you want to do. It's got a toddler area. This is completely unplanned, by the way. But we literally just go there quite a lot. It's got toddler area. It's got soft play. It's got high ropes. It's got low ropes. Just tell me that deal again, please.
It's 170 for 5 days, unlimited time.
Right.
Amazing.
Farmer children. I know where you are going to be going. Let's get back to camps right now, because I think we get into routine and rhythm, especially with our little ones when it comes to nursery, because a lot of nurseries taking children all day, you know, potentially two working parents, and they need that support of, you know, 8 till 6 potentially. Then it comes to the summer and that support is taken away. What can we do for people that might have, you know, say that 0 to 4 category, Claudia? Any camps that would be useful there?
Yeah, we have building blocks nursery. which they have quite a lot of different activities. I would say they have from magic shows to arts and crafts, dancing, music. So it's literally every day different activities so that they don't get bored. And as you say, it's very important for them to have a routine in the morning from 8 to 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have also Small World Nursery, which they have quite a lot of things. They have cooking activities also, and they have incorporated some field trips. So they are taking the kids also outside the nursery. So I think it makes it a bit more special.
Yeah, rather just being in the same space all day, every day. Now, a lot will depend on location as well, right? You know, it has to be convenient.
Mm-hmm.
So we are going to be touching on a few other places as well. We've got Flipped, we've got Aventura. If your kids are crafty, then we've got one for you as well at Studio Lab. Before we go back to the camps, I'm just genuinely curious. We've seen quite a lot of new openings as well in Dubai recently. We went to one at the weekend in Murdiv City Centre. I'm actually going to do a video on it tonight, to be fair, called Super Park. We're seeing a lot of spaces opening up for those summer months. Do you feel like there's enough footfall? Do we feel like there's going to be enough people in Dubai over the summer to kind of justify, you know, huge, you know, running costs?
Look, every year we say the same. We feel that everyone is running away, but afterwards, like the numbers that we see, the traffic that there is, and there is a lot of people that they travel from the GCC. We see a lot of Saudis coming, a lot of Qataris. We see a lot of people from Kuwait. So there is also quite a lot of
kind of GCC travel,
and there's quite a lot of more people that stay here than go. And maybe you can go for a couple of weeks. But it's not anymore like in the past, not that you would live for 2 months and not come back.
I've got real, I'm not sure I agree, to be honest, because I feel, having spoken about remote working early in the week, I feel like a lot of companies are offering that. So you might have, you know, one spouse who has their own business or is a teacher or works flexibly or works in the home. So, you know, they are able to take a longer time. And then the other partner might work for a company where in their contract they might have 2, 3, 6 weeks of remote working. So people, I don't know, I feel like a lot of people are going away. Let me know on the text line 4001 what your kind of take is on people staying. But the roads are certainly quieter, and I am here for that. And we've had a message asking for the name of the park we were just talking about. So it's Adventure Parks, but it's P-A-R-X. And the deal was 170 dirhams for 5 days, unlimited summer pass as well. So if you're in that Al Wasl area, that is the one for you. Joining us from Kids App, that's Kids with a Q, we have got Claudia. You work in Saudi as well, right? The platform is active there. What are you seeing in that part of the world in terms of, you know, kid-centric activities and locations opening up?
It's amazing. Like, there are loads of places opening up, entertainment centers, big projects coming very soon, also initiated by the government. It's really amazing. I would say that they have parks, they have play areas, and everything that you can think of, they are opening up.
Watch this space. Talking summer camps now, from little ones, little tots, all the way up to teens. We've talked about nursery summer camps. We've also talked about a heritage summer camp at the Shindaga Museum, where kids can go along and learn about the history of the UAE. What about getting these kids nice and tired? Claudia is with us, the co-founder of Kids App with a Q. This is my big thing. Burn the energy off. Where are we going to send them, Claudia?
We have a very good camp that is a Flip summer camp, in which it's all about jumping, burning energy,
and
being around. So
where?
They would arrive home.
How much?
Perfect.
Where's Flipped?
Flipped is in Sahara Center in Sharjah. So it's super nice. It opened and the space is very big, and it's amazing. Like, they have different activities also. So they combine it a bit with the burning the energy, with arts and crafts and dancing and...
I think it is about that balance. Like I said, the one that my kids are going to next week, it's like a bit of downtime, a bit of gymnastics, a bit of boxing. I'm like, this is your chance to get some aggression out, guys, and come home nice and tired. What about Aventura? Because I think of this place as being very much a kind of a cooler month destination, but they're doing a summer camp.
Yeah, they're doing a summer camp, and they started last year. They're doing it in two schools, in two locations. So it's indoors. It's not anymore in Aventura itself, in Merdiv. Ventura closed for the summer in May, and they're opening again end of September.
So what will they be doing indoors?
They have a very cool program. They are based in 5 modules. They have nature and sustainability. They have life skills, and they do different activities all throughout the day. So in Aventura, usually in the cooler months, it's one of the favorites for my kids. They go from 9 to 6, so it's like a no-brainer. And they love because they are outdoors, but they also learn quite a lot of life skills. And we were traveling for it. We were in Vietnam, and I don't know what happened. And they said, no, one moment, we learned this in Aventura. And
oh,
I was
really?
Like, I was surprised, and I was like, amazing. Yeah, I know how to start a fire in case we had to stay here. I know how to whatever. And they really do. So it's quite impressive.
That.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just on the website now. You guys have got a deal on that. So you can book it by the day, but I think by the week probably works out being more cost effective,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And 2 locations, did you say?
They have 2 schools, Bright Learners Private School and Raffles International School.
Okay. Hope that
And it's
helps.
From 9 to 2:15. So it's quite good.
That's about the same as a bit shorter than school.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
That's quite good.
I'll take it. We've got time for one more. Can we go to Times Square? Because I love this lab. For anyone that's not familiar with it, can you explain what happens upstairs at Times Square?
Yeah. You have Studio Lab, and it's really, really cool. So for anyone that likes, they do loads of things. They build with metal. They do casting. They do woodworks. Like last time my kids tried to do the names, and they were like, Mommy, we thought that it was so easy and it's really hard. And like,
we went to Times Square a few months ago and they were running free workshops and showing kids how to use the jigsaw.
Yeah.
And my kids made like a little key ring.
Yeah.
And they said the same thing. They're like, oh, I had to, you know, moving my hands around. It's the kind of stuff that I did at school, but I don't think schools do that much anymore. And they're doing a summer camp as well. So this is going to be, I'm guessing, 5 days. It's in the morning, afternoon.
You can do it in the morning or in the afternoon. You have from 10 to 1, the morning shift, or 2 to 5, the afternoon shift. So actually you can choose, and then you can go and steam off some energy in adventure zone.
Go
rock climbing. So you can have a combination of both.
Hopefully offered up some ideas to help you guys out there. But there's loads more on kids.com. That's QIDZ.com. And they've got deals on lots and lots as well. So if you fancy a discount, whether it's for a camp or actually loads of activities and destinations around the city as well. What's your favourite deal right now? We've got about 10 seconds. Where do you feel like you've got a really good bargain?
I think at Adventure Parks is...
Yeah, hard to beat.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Claudia, thank you so much. Wishing you and yours a lovely, lovely summer. Really appreciate it. And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5pm.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.